to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guest today is Jeff Tate, co-founder and CEO of FlexLogix. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Mike.
Okay, before we talk about reconfigurable computing, let's start with Jeff. What brought you to the semiconductor industry?
I'm Canadian. So I got a computer science degree in University of Alberta, then decided I wanted to get an MBA. Went to Harvard University and ended up liking the United States and decided I'd like to move to the United States. There wasn't much high tech in Canada anyways. So I actually took a job in an oil company because that's what I could get. And a year later, I took a 3-week vacation and cold called companies across the US and I got one job offer because getting visas was a pain in the butt. And that was from Advanced Micro Devices. So that's how I ended up in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I noticed that you spent quite a few years with AMD. Exciting times, definitely, you know, a good foundation for computing. And then you went to Rambus. Must be some interesting stories there.
Yeah, well, I spent 10 years at AMD and ended up running a third of the company. I started in marketing. And the reason they were willing to give me a visa was because I had a computer science degree, not a double E, and their marketing people were more transistor types. So I understood architecture and I got into the BitSlice microprocessor group. I got an MSEE in my spare time from Santa Clara, so I knew something about gettering and transistors and stuff. And ended up running their microprocessor board business unit 4 years after I joined. It needed turning around. We turned it around and sold it off, and they kept promoting it into additional business units that needed turning around, and I kept turning them around and ended up doing the 386 as my last thing at AMD. And that was successful. And I went to the board to say, let's build an 8486. And half the board said, what's that? And the other half said, that's only for mainframes. So I went home and I told my wife it was time to do something different. So I, with permission of my wife, I quit and I worked on an idea I had for graphics for Windows computing and talked to a lot of VCs who wanted me to run companies that they had. And I wanted to see why they funded these companies. So I talked to a bunch of them and I ran across Mike Farmwald and Mark Horowitz, professors who started Rambus. And these were super smart guys. They had a very aggressive, risky sounding idea, but they convinced me that they knew how to make it work. So I figured it had the most upside potential. So I ended up being the founding CEO of Rambus, employee number 4.
Yeah. And how long were you at Rambus?
I was there 15 years, long time. Wow.
So what brought you back? I think you took some time off after Rambus. What brought you back? And you know, give us a little bit of the backstory of FlexLogix.
Rambus was a hard ending because we got into a lot of litigation with the DRAM guys who liberally used our technology, as in, you know, violated all of our patents, and that led to a lot of litigation. And that really wasn't a lot of fun. So I needed to recharge the batteries. But I got bored after a while, and two of the VCs that had backed Rambus came to me to run a solar company. I tried turning that around, but it just had too many problems. It had been misrun for a long time, but it was interesting to see a different technology. I retired again, and a few years later, a venture capitalist that I was on the board of at a company called Everspin Magnetic Memory, Peter A. Baer of Lux Capital, said, hey, I met this smart guy, you should talk to him. And venture capitalists, when they meet smart folks, will often look in the Rolodex to see who can they have interview them to give them perspective onto what's the assessment of this person, because the venture capitalists often don't have that strong a technical background anymore. So when I met Chen, who was with his UCLA Press professor, Dejan Markovic, I was immediately impressed. He seemed like a really sharp guy. And over a series of several meetings and several months, he convinced me that he was probably the smartest guy that I had run into since Mark Horowitz of Rambus fame. And I was getting bored again of being retired, and he talked me into doing a startup with him. So that's how we got started with Flex Logics.
Yeah, I know you. We've been working with you for quite some time on SemiWiki. I know the story from there. It's quite amazing what you've accomplished thus far, and that brings us to the topic that we want to cover today, which is reconfigurable computing. So, Jeff, what is reconfigurable computing?
An FPGA is a type of reconfigurable computing, and it's contrasted to microprocessors, which are not. You know, both of them allow you to program. But with a microprocessor, there's a fixed data path, and through instructions, you can move data through different compute elements to and from memory and so forth. So you can do anything you want. But with a field programmable gate array, it's possible to implement any data path and any control path that you want. And FPGAs have been around since the 80s. But reconfigurable computing, people have dreamed of something that could be much different. An FPGA is really used by most people today as a poor man's ASIC. They use it to implement a certain data and control path. They take the FPGA, and when it boots up, they load the code, and it just runs that same information the whole time. And maybe occasionally they implement any bug fixes. But people have been thinking for a long time that you could do something that's dynamic. And what we're starting to do is to move into dynamic reconfigurable computing. And what we've done with our inference chip is we have adapted elements of FPGA technology to allow us to reconfigure the data path as well as the control path in millionths of a second so that we can implement neural network layers and lay out the data path much more efficiently than is possible in a hardwired NoC-based ASIC and achieve higher throughput at lower cost. So that's the benefit of reconfigurable computing, is the ability to achieve performance better than a microprocessor-based approach, at least in the inference space.
Interesting. So let's talk about eFPGAs real quick. I mean, you guys have pioneered the eFPGA market. Everybody knows eFPGA now since thanks to Flex Logics. But how are eFPGAs being used today?
Most people are using eFPGAs today to integrate existing Xilinx, or in some case Altera, FPGA functionality into an SoC. And they're using the FPGA inside the SoC largely how they use the FPGA chip when it was a companion to the SoC. So it's being programmed at boot and it's not changing. And part of the reason they're using the FPGA is that occasionally they'll want to change an algorithm or change something about a protocol. So it's being used in a way that's sort of analogous to your iPhone, where occasionally your apps will get refreshed, your operating system will get refreshed. But it only happens from time to time. Now, that still has significant value, but it's the traditional way of using FPGA technology. What we will see in the future, and what Andy Jaros will be writing a blog on with SemiWiki soon, is dynamic reconfigurable computing, using embedded FPGA to change the data paths and control paths for some or all of the functionality in microseconds rather than once every few months. And for certain applications like encryption or inference, this can have dramatic benefits. But it's a way of using FPGA that's not possible with existing FPGA devices, because existing FPGAs are all programmed from flash memory, and it takes seconds to reconfigure them, so you can't do anything interesting. To do something interesting in the dynamic space, you have to be able to do it in millionths of a second.
So Jeff, you mentioned inference earlier. I'm interested in that application. You know, there's a lot of ways of doing AI accelerators and inference being one application. What were the drivers for Flex Logic to get into that application space? What was the main thing that pushed you there?
It was unexpected, but like what often prompts innovation is a customer with a problem. So we had a major customer come to us and say, I use FPGA for inference. I wonder if you can optimize your embedded FPGA for inference in a way that the existing FPGA companies, you know, aren't planning to do. And the suggestion was to take the ratio of max and lookup tables and make more of the FPGA fabric, the multiplier accumulators, so there's more tops, you know, number of max that you can do.
Right.
And then to make the max 8 bits rather than the larger max that exist in FPGAs, because if you made them 8 bits, you could have more max in the same silicon area and get more throughput. So that was the idea, and that had some merit. But the issue is that there is a large overhead in FPGAs for the programmable interconnect. When Chen had first met with me, he told me, I know the way to make a better FPGA, 80% of its programmable interconnect, and with my new patented interconnect technology, I can cut the number of transistors in half, the number of metal layers in half, and make a smaller FPGA. But still, even with our approach, interconnect is larger than the lookup tables and the max. So what Chen realized in doing some study is that in inference, you're doing billions of max. So you don't need individually addressable max in an interconnect fabric. What he instead did is take an approach of let's aggregate the max into groups of, in this case, he picked 64. It could have been 128, it could have been 32. But let's put max into a dense macro, a more hardwired macro. And now this, what we call one-dimensional tensor processor, where we have 64 max combined with a 2D matrix of weights. This now is a compute unit, which is much higher density in our programmable interconnect fabric. So the ratio of the programmable interconnect to the hardwired amount shifts to where the programmable interconnect is relatively small percentage. So we're getting high hardware utilization. But unlike all the other approaches, we do have a programmable interconnect connecting all of our compute units and memory, so we can rewire them to implement the various convolutions and fully connected layers much more efficiently than any other approach, giving us more throughput per dollar, which is what it's all about for any high volume application.
Thank you, that's very helpful. So based on what you're describing here, how should I think about your inference accelerator? Is it an FPGA or is this some new kind of architecture? I'm not sure how to label it.
Well, it's not a microprocessor-based approach, and it's not an FPGA. It's not an FPGA that's like anything that Xilinx sells. But it uses FPGA technology. We have programmable interconnect that's from our FPGA, as opposed to the NoC-based interconnect that exists in all the other accelerators. In the NoC-based approach, the problem with that is that the NoCs can only feed data from one compute unit to one memory source or sink at a time, and the others are sitting and waiting. With the programmable interconnect, everything can be moving data simultaneously. It's like a crossbar switch. And then we use the programmable logic to implement the control layer. So the state machines that run the inference engine are programmed in programmable logic, not by the customer. The customer is not running any Verilog code that runs on our chip. They just give us the model, and our compiler maps the models into, you know, breaks it all down into the low level of details without the customer having to know or worry about what's inside. So that's why I call this reconfigurable computing, and it's dynamic, which is unlike any FPGA today. So it's like a DNA descendant of FPGA, but very different in many respects. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's kind of FPGA prime, if you will. It has some underlying technology, but to call it an FPGA, I don't think is really correct or really conveys its primary value.
And that's why we call this reconfigurable, or more accurately, dynamically reconfigurable computing. We're literally reprogramming the data paths and how they connect to each other and with memory. Hundreds or thousands of times per second to implement the neural network model efficiently.
The term reconfigurable computing or dynamically reconfigurable computing certainly has application in the inference acceleration domain that you've been describing. Bigger picture, where else do you see this technology being used? It seems like this is not at all the end, but the start.
We've actually got a lot of customers who use FPGAs for signal processing. So since we've been talking about inference, the customers have told our salespeople, I need a lot of multiplier accumulators to do my signal processing, and there's a lot more of them in this inference chip you're doing. Is there some way I can program that instead? And the answer is not really, for a lot of reasons. It's not like programming a Xilinx FPGA, which is what everybody's used to and knows how to do. But we got some customers who gave us some filters to benchmark, and we said, okay, to really you do a dynamically reconfigurable signal processing unit using the X1 hardware, what we would do is the same thing we're doing for inference. We would have a front end, which would probably be Simlink of MATLAB, so you can build any DSP engine you want at a high level. And then we'll take the output of that and we'll convert that into the state machines that would control the MAC blocks. And we did some performance estimates and showed them to customers. And basically our chip that is 50 square millimeters could outperform the signal processing functions of the biggest Xilinx FPGAs. So we found a lot of customer interest in doing dynamically reconfigurable computing applied to signal processing. But at this point, we just don't have the bandwidth as a company to pursue that. But it's on our list to get to when we have some spare bandwidth down the road. And I suspect we'll probably find other applications. It's any place where you can take a task and break it down into some large hardware block, like our one-dimensional tensor processor. It could be something else. It could be blocks of Galois processing units for encryption. And we're reconfiguring these units and hooking them up in different data paths could give you some advantages. So we know in signal processing, it looks like it'd be a much better approach than anything else that we've seen. And there's probably going to be other spaces we can apply dynamically reconfigurable computing to. Now, it's not going to be applicable to random code, random code where you're just branching all the time. Taking millionths of a second to reconfigure is too long for that kind of thing. It's more applicable where there's an algorithm that involves millions and billions of computations with fairly predictable, steps between them, and that where reconfiguration from time to time is what you need to do as opposed to, all the time.
With Moore's law kind of slowing down and the curve flattening, I'm seeing a lot of different kind of innovation happening, and people are moving to more parallel algorithms instead of, blazingly fast serial algorithms where you could just go to the next process node and call it a day. So I suspect there's going to be a lot of applications like that in the future. This is start of something big, I would say.
Yeah, we think so. The inference business by itself, everybody believes will be very big. It's a good sized business today, but a lot of people believe AI inference will rival the size of the processor business in a decade. So that's plenty big all by itself. But signal processing today is, it's a $10 billion, $20 billion market. And there's probably other places we can apply dynamically reconfigurable computing, encryption, and various other spaces. So we're excited about what we're onto here. And when we initially got into this, people didn't see the linkage between, what are you doing embedded FPGA and inference for? Those have nothing to do with each other. And on the surface with the end applications, that's correct. But the underlying technology is actually the same, programmable interconnect and the ability to dynamically reconfigure them. So we think this is a platform that will have legs and can be applied in many spaces down the road.
That's really great content, but just on a final note, Jeff, can you talk a little bit about the funding round you recently raised? It was significant. Where are these funds going to be used, and what's really next for FlexLogix?
Yeah, Dan, we just closed a round of $55 million. It was led by Mithril Capital Management, and we're excited to have them on board. They share with us the vision that reconfigurable computing can be a big deal, and the market that investors are most excited about is inference, because it's still at the early stages of growth, especially outside of the data center, which is where we're focused. And the money that we've raised, we expect to double the size of the company this year. And 80% of that is going into our inference business. Fill out the software team, build a sales and applications team to support customers, augment our hardware team. But we are also investing in our embedded FPGA business, which Mithril and the whole board is excited about, because that has become a cash flow positive business. And we see that the potential for continuing market penetration is significant. This could be as big as ARM is. It took a long time for ARM to get as big as they are, and embedded FPGA is still new, so it's not going to happen overnight. But we are investing in embedded FPGA, and we see that the commercial adoption is really starting to accelerate. And we're moving to 7 nanometer, and before long, we'll move to 5. And what that's going to do is allow us to move into integrating complete FPGAs into SoCs, bringing our technology into data centers, base stations, and 5G for the first time. So we're investing in both. Inference is the driver, but embedded FPGA is a significant part of the play as well.
You know, that's excellent. Mike and I are always saying that this is one of the most exciting times to be in the semiconductor industry. And this is just a very excellent example of that. You know, I've been working with you guys for quite a few years since the beginning, and you guys have worked so hard. And it's just very refreshing to see hard work pay off like this. So congratulations, Jeff. This has been excellent content. I think this is a good stopping point. Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you, Mike. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. Thank you, gentlemen.
Dan and Mike, thank my you. Pleasure. Anytime.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.